Seen you locked and changed, didn't ease my pain. Left me feeling ashamed out in the rain. Can't explain the pain, how I stay sane. Don't like the game, will it ever change?
Everyone, I am Dr. Tommy Watson, and welcome to another episode of Resilient Stories Podcast, where we share the grit and glory behind the stories of amazing people like you who have bounced back from failure and adversity, going to live the best lives on purpose. Today's show is being sponsored by Million Dollar Business Pathway, where we believe everyone has a story to tell and to sell. If you want to learn how to tell and sell your story, go to tawatson.com under the programs and products page and click on Million Dollar Business Pathway to get yourself started. So folks, are you guys ready for another amazing show today? It is an honor for me to have with me today, man, my brother Jeff, man, brother Jeff, just simply known as brother Jeff in the Five Points Denver neighborhood, man. Brother, it's good to see you. It's been a long time. Brother Jeff has been a person I have looked up to for a long time, man. He's doing great work in the city of Denver, and he has been a person who has seen and experienced a lot of the transformation of what's been taking place in our neighborhood, right, brother?
No, absolutely.
Good to see you. Welcome to the show, brother Jeff. Hey, can you briefly tell the audience, man, who you are and just got a great podcast. Want to shout out the podcast as well.
Well, you know, we do a lot. And first of all, before I even get started, I want to just tell you how amazing it is to see all of your accomplishments, and particularly knowing some of your story and your stomping grounds. And you are an absolute prototype, an example for individuals that have experienced adversity and have overcome their situation to become, at the top of their game, whatever that is. And so we all have roadblocks, we all have obstacles. But when I think about Dr. Tommy Watson, I'm thinking about an individual that, you know, we not only need to highlight, but put in front of those who believe that their condition is actually the end of their story, as opposed to a stepping stone to what they could be. And so with that being said, I'm just super proud of all that you've accomplished and the trajectory that you've gone in and your willingness to give back in terms of life lessons and to make this world a better place. I'm Brother Jeff. I founded Brother Jeff's Cultural Center in Northeast Denver, Five Points, right there on Five Points during the what they call the height of gangs, drugs, and violence.
Yeah,
I created Brother Jeff's Cultural Center when young people such as like Dr. Watson can tell you, there were young people that were going to Pipkin's mortuary paying for their funerals in advance.
Yeah.
And they were saying things like, this is just the way it is. There was lots of guns, lots of gangs, lots of drugs, and lots of violence. What I did around Brother Jeff's Cultural Center was to create a safe space that showed the potential of exactly what Dr. Watson is doing right now, saying this is not how the world has to be and is not how the world totally is. So we created a safe place. We use the culture to attract young people, particularly. We had open mic, spoken word, hip hop, utilizing education and literacy as a linchpin. And so it's a community hub that has been there since the early 90s. I've traveled around the world. I stay in Africa. I stay in, you know, Five Points. I travel extensively and I share our stories. And so with that being said, it's just great to be on your show.
Man, Brother Jeff, I'm so proud of you, brother. It makes my heart just go pitter-pat, man. Just seeing you and knowing the work you've done. And when you mentioned the early 90s, for a lot of people who don't necessarily know about Denver and Five Points at the time, early 90s was when, unfortunately, you know, we saw probably some of the most hideous things when it came to gang violence in our area. You know, I was leaving Denver, early 90s, the Crips and Bloods was running rampant through the neighborhood. So for you to be able to be a vessel and a solution to the problem, man, it's just absolutely amazing, Brother Jeff. And, you know, many of us have watched you from a distance for some time. I want to kind of go a little deeper and just let our audience get a chance to get to know you on a more personal level. And, you know, so what's been one of the biggest challenges you kind of faced whether it be in your childhood or your or adulthood, kind of that you face, be the professionally or personally? What's been one of the biggest ones you face?
You know, one of the biggest challenges that I've dealt with is kind of in some of the summary of my story that we opened with. And that challenge is knowing a world that was and knowing a world let me put it more specifically, knowing a community that was dismantled and seeing a community dismantled into chaos, a lot of death and destruction, and then the retooling of that community via gentrification.
Yeah, absolutely.
And me knowing every step along the way. So the greatest challenge has been reconciling that story of what community looks like. Usually when I travel, most folks always say, they say, where are you from? I say, DC. And they say, oh, Chocolate City. And I say, no, Denver, Colorado. They say, you mean they're Black folks in Denver?
You're right.
You know, and I'm sure, Dr. Watson, you get that a lot. But what I can say is, even though Colorado is like 3% Black, I grew up in a community that was literally 97% Black. Absolutely. And so I grew up in a Black community. It was Five Points. It was Park Hill. It was, you know, grew into Montbello. It spread out into Aurora and all of these different things. And so the greatest obstacle to me, or the greatest challenge, was to begin seeing young brothers, particularly Dr. Watson's age, beginning to murder one another in these streets as if they were enemies of one another.
Absolutely.
Not knowing in most cases that they are family of one another. The only difference between Five Points and Park Hill is that a family member purchased a house in Park Hill. And these folks start seeing each other at funerals, realizing that they're cousins and their family. Mm-hmm. And so the greatest obstacle was and barrier was seeing the destruction of a community disintegrate into extreme violence, and then figuring out ways to overcome and the why behind that. So those are that's the obstacle, looking at the destruction of a community that was wholly Black, full of love, full of Black business, entrepreneurialism, educational standards, exceeding the national norm, scholarship, athletic, seeing all of that begin to disintegrate, and then reconciling the how and why.
Yeah, that is so critical, Brother Jeff. And as you mentioned, you know, at Five Points is even considered the Harlem of the West at one point in time. You know, it was a thriving Black community. And as you know, as a community leader who has kind of watched this for at least 30 years, Brother Jeff, we don't often hear from you in terms of the toll that it took on you personally. What did it feel like watching this transformation take place in our communities, from going from the good to the bad, now to gentrified? Talk to me about some emotions.
Well, you got to think about, you know, my generation was a lot different than your generation. Mm-hmm. And so when I was growing up, there was a lot of adult participation in young lives, and those adults lived in the community. Mm-hmm. So if there was a police officer, it was your friend's dad,
right,
who lived across the alley. It was Mr. White. You know what I mean? It was the same person that was coaching your football team, mm-hmm. you know, or, you know, just thinking about we're playing little league football, then we're off to baseball, then we're off the track. And like, there was a lot of adult participation in young lives. Mm-hmm. And so if you think about Park Hill and you think about Five Points, in Five Points, particularly later down the line, they had the red bricks. So they had what was known as the projects.
Sure.
There was a government policy that said that the Black man couldn't be in the household.
That's right. Yeah.
So you're starting to see a lot of individuals who grew up without fathers, because to have housing meant that the Black man in most cases couldn't be inside of the house. Right. So you're seeing the destruction of of the family. Mm-hmm. In Park Hill, you had a lot of families that were headed by fathers and mothers. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And so that participation on both sides, everyone held accountability for their communities, whatever, no matter what the circumstances were. Mm-hmm. And so to think about, you know, your question in terms of like what happened and how you reconcile those different things and what's going on, you know, I start to look at, you know, me being in a single parent household, you know what I mean? In those critical teenage years, being raised by a mother who's working two jobs oftentimes, right, and traveling. Mm-hmm. So I'm the anomaly in terms of looking at folks that have fathers in the home, et cetera, and perhaps even that level of guidance in terms of what it meant to be a young person growing up. I didn't have that directly, but I had all of that in community.
Right, absolutely.
So most folks in our community, they grew up with many fathers. Mm-hmm. They grew up with many mothers. Mm-hmm. In Five Points, in the Red Bricks, even though, you know, those families were structured different, there were still a lot of coaches. That's right. There were still a lot of mentors. There was still a lot of, you know, still engagements and opportunities to exceed economically beyond those particular conditions. What happened is this thing called crack cocaine. You know, this was a turning point, you know. And then when you start talking about Crips and Bloods, et cetera, you have to remember, Dr. Watson, I grew up in a time where there was no such thing as a drive-by shooting.
Absolutely. Yeah.
There was no, there, it's not in your mind. It doesn't exist.
Yes.
You know, I grew up in a time where no young person had a gun.
Right.
Like you had, if it was a problem, you had to guard your grill and knuckle up. You know what I mean? Yeah. And so to move from all of that to where we're at shows that there have been some structural compromising of what's called community. Mm-hmm. What I've learned along the way, Dr. Watson, is it was very intentional. It was policy. And it was also, as you see now, when you mentioned the gentrification and the connection, it was a move to take our legacy and our assets.
Yes.
You know, and so recognizing that has been a challenge because a lot of people don't recognize that.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, there are a lot of people who grow up in certain conditions that may lack resources and they don't realize why they don't have those resources. Mm-hmm. They think it's a failing on Black people's part and that we're somehow deficit, right, and that we're somehow, some would say second class, but the big word is inferior.
Right. Absolutely.
You know, there's an inferiority complex that is ingrained in oppressed populations to where we don't see the systems attack on us and we just see each other attacking one another. I was able to learn how to think critically at a very early age in my household with my mother, with my family, to look critically and to be able to do this thing called thinking.
Yeah.
And that's not something that is largely taught. There's a lot of conditioning going on, but there's not a lot of thinking going on. So by the time you saw me in Five Points working as a community activist or a community leader, it wasn't because I went to school or I went to study or I got prepared for that. It was because young brothers were being shot and killed and murdered right there in front of you. That's right. And so to wrap up this first part of this question, it's like, what do you do when your nephews, your brothers, your friends are in the war zone? And you grew up in a war zone. And I don't know if individuals recognize what Dr. Watson came up through. It was a war economically, it was a war socially, it was a war chemically, it was a war spiritually, it was a war physically. And so when you start seeing individuals literally being murdered in front of you, there's no school that you can go to that will prepare you for how you're going to respond. Right. Now, that's trauma. But then when it happens again and again and again and again and again, At some point, you have to say, what is my response as an individual, even if the society has not come to terms with or even prioritized the destruction of Black bodies. Mm-hmm. And so what I've learned is out of necessity, and at the root of what I've learned is simple. It's called love.
That's right.
It's the answer is love.
That's right.
And so if you love yourself, if you love your community, you won't harm your community. And when you're going through destruction in community, you will put yourself on the line at the expense of everything to stop the killing or to bring back a semblance of what was done for me. And that was being an adult in young people's lives, because there were adults in my life. So I'm just doing what you see with me is just reciprocity.
Yeah, that is beautiful. And again, I can't thank you enough for what you've done and the role model you've been to so many of us over the years. You know, so Brother Jeff, there's people who have probably watched you engage in this work for a long time, man. And they're probably asking, why does Brother Jeff keep going over there when you're seeing these murders taking place over and over and over and over again on these large numbers? And now you got to deal with gentrification. And people are saying, why is Brother Jeff sticking to this? What makes you stick and stay to the mission and your cause that you have in your heart to do?
You know, Dr. Watson, it's basic. It's a knowledge of self. Mm-hmm. And once you know who you are, then when you see stories being framed that are not in line with reality in many cases,
right,
it's incumbent upon me to share what I know with self and kind, and even others. So for example, educationally, mm-hmm, I'm talking to young people that are going to school right now, and they're talking about, say, for example, American history, and they're talking about our condition in this country's condition as it relates to slavery. Mm-hmm. Now, I can listen to a teacher or I can hear these students come back and say, this is what we learned today. And then I can say, Dr. Watson, well, first of all, Black folks were enslaved,
right,
as opposed to slaves.
Yes.
And one is a condition. Mm-hmm. Another is an identity.
Yes.
And when you have individuals that are teaching literal white supremacy, mm-hmm, that is shaping the minds of our community, that will trigger a response of lack of love and self-care, which would allow us to shoot and kill one another in a system that doesn't even care about us.
Yes, absolutely.
I'm implored, mm-hmm, to stand in the middle of this misinformation as an elder and as a community member. I'm going to keep going back into that fire.
Yes.
I'm going to do like Harriet Tubman. She was not a runaway slave. Slaves don't run.
That's right.
The only thing a slave can do is take you to another master.
Yes.
Harriet Tubman was an abductor. Yes. She would go and get her people and then go back.
Yes.
And so I don't know what propelled her to do that, but I do know that she and I have that same spirit,
right,
of we're not going to stop.
That's right.
We're not going to abdicate our mission. We're not going to step away from our purpose. We are not going to allow our community to be disrespected, used as a tool and a slave, and look the other way while it's taking place.
Right.
And so there's just something in me that drives me to look around that corner and see who's doing what to whom, and to be a peacemaker, a peacekeeper, a beacon, and a defender at times, a disruptor at times, and someone who will always stand up for our community and say, no matter what you think we are doing, I'm not going to shun us and walk away. I'm going to raise us up, and we're going to move into a new world together.
That's
because
right.
My people are my people.
That's
And I can't disconnect myself from them and join on to another population at the expense of who I am. That's the embodiment of self-hatred. And I just, I don't have an appetite for it.
That's right. That's right. Well, I love that. You know, one of my biggest struggles as a school principal was that those things you said right there. It led me to leaving the system and organization because of all the games that were being played and being told to kind of pump it down and pump the brakes a little bit, you know. So it's really frustrating though, you know, but as you look back over the years, Brother Jeff, it's been nearly 30 plus years for you doing the community work there. How would you say this has all kind of shaped you as a person?
You know, Dr. Watson, because I know who we are, and even deeper than that, because I know whose we are, and because of the community that I've come out of, I'm shaped in excellence. Yeah, absolutely. I stand on the shoulders of greatness.
Yes.
I stand on the shoulders of giants.
Yes.
I stand on the shoulders of the people that the world looks at and they can't even imagine how we continue to not only endure, but to compete and win at the highest levels.
That's right.
If those of us knew our story, we would be baked in so much pride. There would not be an "I can't" even in our vocabulary. When we realize that our history did not begin in Jamestown, Virginia in 1619 on an auction block, when we realize that slaves didn't come from Africa, Africans came from Africa and were enslaved.
That's right.
And we start to think about the process or what the elders call seasoning in terms of how someone reduces someone's potential. So much so to where in this society right now, we were not considered human beings. And for us to overcome that constantly and to create everything that this world uses to move forward and to shine what they call technological advances on comes from us. In the United States of America, jazz is one of the only indigenous so-called American art forms, because the indigenous Americans, the indigenous populations who they destroyed, annihilated, and reduced to reservations on many levels, that's the original indigenous sound of North America. Europeans have done nothing, what they call white Americans have done nothing but have modeled what they learned from Europe, their classical music, their way of life. It's not indigenous to place. Something as simple as jazz is indigenous to place, and the world embraces that. Something as indigenous as the field holler, or the way a person shouts or steps or moves, even in the fraternity when they step, or even when they pour libation, when the homies are on the corner pouring a little bit for those who are not here. When you think about blues and you think about hip hop, you think about soul and R&B, their greatest in terms of Europeans pattern themselves after us. Eminem is not the father of hip hop. Elvis is not the king of rock and roll.
That's right.
And when we understand who we are and whose we are, we will continue to embrace our greatness. And that's the legacy that we will share with our future and coming generations, that they will carry forward. In lieu of that, what you will have is the manipulation of a story that said that we were less than, and we were somehow in the jungles speaking Ooga Booga. Right. And if we were speaking Ooga Booga, it was our language, because we are the fathers and mothers of language. We're the fathers and mothers of science and agriculture and medicine and archaeology and astronomy. Every field of knowledge finds its root and origin with us. But today, when you were a principal and the teachers that are in these schools today, because they are engulfed in a system that is based on white supremacy, you have individuals who have been conditioned through a entertainment industry that somehow puts Black women up on a pedestal in front of all of the world. And we as a people point to our mothers, our nieces, our aunties, our daughters, and call them bitches.
Yeah.
And put them on a pole.
Yeah.
In the form of entertainment, there will never be a person or a people that will disrespect their women. You can't go up and down the radio dial right now and find Mexicans calling their women bitches. You cannot find white people calling their women bitches. You can't find Asians calling themselves bitches. But our culture right now, that has been fashioned as a way to create success, right, i.e. make money, and has been normalized. When we say, without criticizing, when we show a critical analysis to our young people and say, first of all, that's not a bitch, that's a queen.
Yeah.
A bitch is a dog.
Yeah.
And if you spell dog backwards, because we're in a backwards world right now, that ain't a dog, that's a god. Yeah. See, this is what they don't want us as Black men to be, one, discussing, and let alone sharing, because it is a lack of knowledge of self that allows for a structure of white supremacy to sustain itself. And so this is who Brother Jeff is, the griot, the historian, the one who knows. And the things that I'm talking to you about, Dr. Watson, is not what I've read. I've been there.
Yes.
I've been to the continent. I live on the continent. I can touch, show, and prove our greatness. We're so great that they even took Egypt out of Africa. There are people who do not understand that Egypt is in Africa. And when they do understand that Egypt is in Africa, then they have to come to the conclusion that all of that that they see in Egypt, which is in Africa, was put there by Africans.
Right, absolutely.
And if Africans put it there and Africans are Black, then you're looking at the original person of the planet right now on this podcast. Yes. They don't want this information to be shared, told, or even known.
Yes, that's powerful, Brother Jeff. Now, I love it, but we can sit and talk about this all day long. You know, so Brother Jeff, you know, we're coming off of year 2020, man. We have some folks in our community who have lost loved ones, lost hope, lost material possessions. What words of encouragement can you give them, man, to let them know, hey, even if you're in 5 points, if you're in Chicago, if you're on the kind of Africa, if you're in Europe, it doesn't matter. How can we move forward and know that a brighter day is to come? What can you tell our folks out there?
The way I address the brighter day is I will tell you that the brighter day is here.
Right.
It ain't coming.
That's right.
There is nothing you have to look for to come. All you have to do is open your eyes.
Yes.
And open your mind. Dr. Watson, when he was unhoused, not knowing where he was going to have a place to sleep or not having an address, yes, it looks dismal, but that was a brighter day, depending on how you look at it. If you are stuck in a condition and there's no way for you to get out of it, you can't see an out, and you have agreed with the condition, that's called failure.
That's right, yeah.
But if you can look up, even if you can't get up,
yeah,
you're successful.
That's right.
Because if you can look up, the universe is going to conspire to assist you in getting up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So everything, in my opinion, functions between your ears and in your mind. If you have light in your mind right now, no matter what, COVID,
that's right.
Unemployment,
that's right.
Being unhoused, being addicted. If today you are able to put one foot in front of the other, see, you, if you fail 1,000 times and get up 1,001, you successful.
That's right.
And so the brighter day is this. There have been a lot of folks that have gone through challenges relative to COVID, et cetera. Our rituals have been interrupted. Our economics have been interrupted. And when I say our rituals have been interrupted, we've had a lot of loss of lives that we haven't been able to mourn. We haven't been able to come together collectively. And in our community, we call it a celebration. We haven't had an opportunity to come together and celebrate life.
That's right.
Of those who have moved on, which leaves a lot of individuals with this heaviness and this depression and this place that they can't move forward because community has been displaced. And the gangs, drugs, and violence also displaced community. This is another opportunity for us to see how important community is. Haven't you seen, Dr. Watson, when people, whoever they are, start seeing people again, they light up?
That's right.
They're like when we see each other, even though you've been gone for so long and we haven't embraced each other physically, when we saw each other, didn't we just light up?
Right, that's right.
Didn't we? And then we start reminding each other of stories and people and coming. In other words, we're given life. Mm-hmm. It's the advice mm-hmm. that I would give to your question in terms of what can people do. Don't isolate.
Yeah.
Don't think you're alone. Don't weather your problems and your challenges alone. Have a mentor or someone who wants the best for you without getting anything from you,
right.
Where they just want the best for you. Take a close examination of what you think when you think of a brighter day or what's to come, because if you look real close, you have that right now. You may not have all of what you want, but if you have a piece of what you want, water that.
Yeah.
If you got one credit, go get two credits.
Right.
Don't complain that you don't have 360 credits, because Dr. Watson didn't become a doctor all at once.
Right.
And so celebrate what you have, even if it's a morsel or a seed. Mm-hmm. Don't lose sight of that, because if you do, you'll get lost in a sea of despair.
That's right.
And then you will start doing things to help you recover what you think you lost, i.e., you might become addicted to something.
That's right. That's right.
That is not in your benefit. It could be drugs, it could be a lifestyle that's not healthy. And I'm not putting anything down in terms of what anybody does to cope. If you're listening to Brother Jeff right now, I don't want you to think that I have it and you don't. I believe in we. I am because we are. I don't believe in rugged individualism. And so to the individual that is looking for a way out of no way, remember, we are a people that make a way out of no way.
That's right.
We are the no way people.
That's right.
And once you realize that, then you will tap into that internal energy, that power that says, okay, here's how I'm going to do this. And when you do it, you're going to create something that the world is going to look at and say, how did you do it, Dr. Watson? How did you navigate being unhoused to become a doctor, a scholar, and someone who's looked upon around the world for hope? Said, I made a way out of no way.
That's right.
And along the way, I met someone or someones that poured into me.
That's right.
And so think about the folks that are pouring into your life right now and see if it helps you move forward or if it's pushing you back.
That's right.
There are people in your life that are either going to push you or pull you. And sometimes being pulled isn't a bad thing.
Right.
Because sometimes they're pulling you away from circumstances that are not in your best interest.
That's right.
And being pushed sometimes isn't a bad thing because they're pushing you away from conditions that you're used to that you think are normal.
That's right.
And they're pushing you into a new reality that you might be uncomfortable in, that you might want to go back into your familiar space. But once you got pushed out of that womb closed.
Right.
You probably would have stayed in your mother's womb, not 9 months. You would have stayed in that warm, comfortable water until you just were stillborn.
That's right.
But once you came out of that womb closed. Mm-hmm. Now you're in a different environment. Mm-hmm. If you are in a dark place, think of it as a womb and birth yourself. Use those labor pains to push you into another reality. And when you get into that different reality, grow from there. Because once you grow from there, you're going to move to another reality. In other words, like we say in the hood, and it don't stop.
That's right. Folks out there, I hope you've been inspired by my brother, Brother Jeff, man. It is a pleasure to get the knowledge and wisdom. I think you're breaking some things down. It's going to be very helpful for a lot of our audience out there. You know, last but not least, I want to ask this question here. You know, the center of our podcast focuses on two things, purpose and resiliency. What last words can you leave our audience with around purpose and resiliency?
Purpose and resilience. The first word, purpose, is attached to what I teach, live by, and share with all young people that I come in contact with or people in general. There's three things you need in life: identity, purpose, and direction. Identity, who am I? Purpose, why am I here? Hmm. Direction. How do I get to where I'm going?
That's right.
Resilience is a great addition to that because at each stage, you've got to be resilient when at every point you're ready to stop.
That's right.
At every point you say, I've had enough. At every point you say, I can't get it. At every point you say, I've arrived. Resilience is probably likened to the Most High, the Creator, because everything that is anything exists because of resilience.
Right.
It's when you stop that your story ends.
Yes.
It's as you continue to push, you're continuing to add to that book. And what I would say is my final words, make your book great. Make your book vast. It don't have to be a lot of pages. It might just be one word, but whatever it is, make sure it has purpose. And you can prove that it has purpose because of your resilience in making it happen. You all get out there and make it happen. That's what I got to say.
That is awesome, Brother Jeff. Man, I am so proud. I'm just gloating over here. Not only is he a brother and kicking great knowledge, but we're from the same place. And I've watched him do it for years consistently. He's a person who stands by it. He's not just talking it. He's been doing it. And he's been doing it in some of the toughest situations. So, again, I can't thank you enough. Folks out there, if you're somebody who has a great story, we want to hear from you, please go to tawatson.com, share your story. Subscribe to our podcast, download this episode, share with your folks. And everyone out there, thank you guys for tuning in. Brother Jeff, you are amazing, brother. Hang tight. Everyone else, God bless. We'll see you soon. Take care.
Yours truly. Dr. Watson.